So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Monday is the anniversary of the day Roger first published his famous thesaurus.
Then on Tuesday, we say happy birthday, Mr. Potato Head.
On Wednesday, the extraordinary stories of the child soldiers who fought in the American Civil War.
On Thursday, how King James changed the word of God.
And on Friday, what did spam emails look like in 1978?
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes every weekday, wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, Man fans. Ollie Man here with The Modern Man. Hope you're very well. The sun is out. Spring is here. Hooray! I am wearing my blue jumper and slacks today. And although the first thing that Ollie Peart said to me when he saw me earlier was, "Are you off to play golf?" I didn't let that get to me. We have still managed to put together, in my view, a cracking episode of the show for your delectation and delight. As you know, our main ambition here is to try and be a magazine show in audio form. So our main interview this week is what a print mag would call a human interest story. It's a lady who's had an unconventional and disarming relationship simply telling her story to me. I think it's really compelling. I met her socially last year, and she just kind of casually mentioned the central ingredients of this particular year of her life that we talk about. And I was like, what? Would you mind telling me that in front of a microphone, please? I think it's an amazing story, and the issues that it touches upon are probably not as uncommon as we'd all like to think. It might make some of you think twice about the person you're currently dating. Elsewhere on the show today, you will learn which mega-selling rapper I secretly adore, you'll learn why you shouldn't always rely on your mother's intuition, and you'll learn why there isn't a mainstream cock ring that both constricts and vibrates. I told you, magazine show. Let's go. On this week's Modern Man.
He told me that the only means of communication would be via email, so why would I question it?
How it feels when your loving, trusting relationship isn't everything it seems.
It's a hands-free vibrator, but later models also came with an app.
And plug in, baby, Alex Fox on the sex toy you can hack. But first, it's the moment where a man with a beard says, "These are the big trends of the week," and then I say, "Oh, they're not really, they're a bit shit, aren't they?" It's Ollie Peart with the Zeitgeist. Hello, Ollie.
Hello, Ollie. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, thank you. What are the big trends of the week?
The universe. Well, more specifically, it's movie universes.
Right.
The Matrix. You know it.
I'm excited that The Matrix might be back.
It might be coming back, yeah.
As soon as that started trending on Twitter, I was clicking all the links and finding out about it, because The Matrix was, when I was 15, the best film I'd ever seen. I realise, retrospectively, that's because it's aimed at 15-year-olds.
Yeah, it was an incredible film. But I remember the first time I saw it, and I was just completely blown away.
It's like the first time I'd imagined philosophical ideas, but also in the same film got to see a guy in a trench coat shoot people.
Coolest thing about The Matrix?
The Nokia 3210.
What the... No, bullet time. Oh, my God.
Oh, well, the phone and that.
But it's going to be slightly different, because it doesn't sound like they're going to bring back the original, so the Wachowskis. How do you say it?
The Wachowskis.
That's what I said. So they might be not bringing them back, or Keanu Reeves. So my point is, they are going to take the Matrix universe, and they're going to create a completely new story, a complete new set of characters, new cast, new everything. Hollywood has exhausted the sequels. It's exhausted the reboots. This is something completely different. If you look at The Matrix, all the rules are there. You know how it works. It's got its own physics and its own reality and all that kind of stuff. And within that now, you can remove all the original characters, and you can create new, unique, totally different stories, but within the rules of The Matrix.
Yeah, I see, yeah. So you get all these sort of comic book franchise things, and they all exist in the same world, and that's what they do now instead of sequels, isn't it? They just create another story that's a bit like the one you read before.
Another example, get rid of Harry Potter, come up with a new bloke called, like, Jeff, who is also, like, a wizard.
Well, that's what they've done, isn't it, with Fantastic Beasts and where to CGI them.
Yeah. And what, and that's based in Hogwarts?
No, it's not. It's using the Harry Potter world, but it's got nothing to do with Harry Potter, essentially.
Oh.
So that's also a... What did you call it? What was the phrase you used?
Universes.
Universe. Same, that's a universe. Universe. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Same thing happened with Star Wars. Same thing happened with Marvel, DC, all that lot. So, you know, you want trends. That's a trend.
Yes, I think you're probably right.
Yes.
What else have you got for us this week?
Oxenfree.
What's that?
Oxenfree is a game. People who are familiar with it will know that it's been out for just over a year. But it's only been available on console and on PC. But now it's available on iOS. Basically, it's a story game. So you're a group of teenagers. Well, you're not a group of teenagers. You're one of the teenagers, a girl called Alex. And you go along to this little island called Edward Island or something. And the what you're going there for is you're just going to have a bonfire on the beach and drink some beers and have a laugh.
That was the pilot episode of Echo Beach, the ITV soap opera with Jason Donovan, short-lived. Its companion show, Moving Wallpaper, sitcom with Ben Miller. That was okay. I speak the truth.
What happens, you're on this island and you can control what she says, Alex says. So as the conversations between the teenagers are happening, little speech bubbles pop up above her head and you can sort of decide what you're going to say in response to people. Anyway, the whole sort of story kind of takes a bit of a spooky turn. She goes and visits a cave, or you go and visit a cave, and then all this weird sort of extra terrestrial, spooky, weird stuff starts happening. And basically there's ghosts on the island who are communicating with you through your friends.
Okay. I stopped caring after you said extraterrestrial.
I actually meant supernatural, because it's ghosts.
Yeah, well, whatever.
You're just not interested in that stuff?
Well, no, I still have not. I just, you know, it's a bit done, isn't it? I actually quite like the idea of just playing a teenage girl having a nice conversation. I was quite up for that.
But the thing is, I'm not into that kind of stuff. I'm not into supernatural, like, all that. Like, I wouldn't sit down and watch a film about that kind of stuff, really. I'm not interested.
But there's a butt coming.
But I really like it. Mm. I'm totally engrossed in this story. I'm absorbed in all the characters. I know what's going on.
Visually, is it any good? You're saying it was a text adventure game, basically. What does it look like?
Visually, it looks like the Gruffalo animations. So it's really cool. And it's sort of like, it's like a mashup of Scooby-Doo and Juno. So they're like really indie characters.
So it is basically for the kind of people who grew up playing Granny's Garden and then Monkey Island and now want an Apple app that's a bit like that, but also looks a bit like a comic book.
I think it's a really great way of storytelling. I actually really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still enjoying it. And I just think there should be more games like that. Why not? It's great. There is one problem, though.
Mm.
It's massive. I've literally had to delete all of the pictures of my dog off my phone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In file size?
It's huge.
Okay.
It's ridiculously big, and it saps your battery.
And does it try and get you to buy extra things?
No.
No.
Oh, it's $3.99 anyway.
Okay.
So,
do you remember when games used to be 50 quid and they'd come on a cartridge?
Well, they still are, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. Well, the ones on cartridges still are. But, I mean, when people complain about apps that try and upsell you fruit so that you can skip a level or whatever, I just kind of feel like saying, you don't know you're born, mate. It used to cost 50 quid to buy the game in the first place. Like, if it's $3.99 or free, and then twice you have to pay £5 to access a level, that's still a bargain.
And it's only a matter of time before,
we live through tough times.
I think podcasts should do it. Why not? You could have like serials or storytelling. Why not have like that? Like, I'd rather do that than sit down and listen to it. That'd be wicked. Get rid of podcasts.
Right. Visualise the podcast.
Visualise podcasts.
In game form.
App game form, yes.
If we did that with the Foxhole, it probably would be very popular.
Lots of swiping and twizzling.
Yeah. I wonder how you would be depicted.
Well, like a little gnome.
It's not photorealism. And what is your final trend of the week?
It's a prediction, Ollie.
Oh, wow.
Going all Mystic Meg on you.
Excellent.
The album
is
dead.
Is this the Ed Sheeran thing? Because doesn't that prove that the album is very much alive? I mean, Ed Sheeran's album tracks have gone into the top 40 singles chart.
Ed Sheeran has 16 singles in the top 40 at the moment.
Yeah.
And that has completely obliterated the chart system.
Yeah, but that means the singles chart is dead. Doesn't mean the album's dead.
He's got 3 albums in the top 5 albums chart. But that's not actually the story. The story's to do with Drake.
Go on.
So Drake's released what I would call an album on Saturday, but Apple...
I'm actually excited because, believe it or not, I am a Drake fan.
Are you?
Yeah. So, right, I know, okay. I don't seem the type. Okay.
On Saturday, he's released an album, but Apple and Drake have called it a playlist. They are They are rebranding the playlist. Even though it costs $10.99, it's 22 songs, and on Spotify, it's still called an album. There's an attempt by Apple to basically rebrand the playlist.
I'm not down with that.
No.
But I have to admit that the only reason really that I'm not down with it is because in that kind of weirdy, beardy way, I quite like reading lists in Mojo magazine about the 50 best albums and whether or not Automatic for the People is better than Revolver. I mean, really, who gives a shit? I mean, it is just a collection of 10 songs, isn't it? And it was only ever that because it fitted on a physical format 4 decades ago. It doesn't really matter, does it?
Yes, it does. I think a playlist is a little bit different. There are people arguing that it's absolutely fine and it doesn't seem like the music industry is that bothered, actually. But out of the 22 songs, he's written most of them. There's a couple of covers in there and there's a couple of other people singing there. So you could argue, well, yeah, you know.
Who's Drake covering?
Bon Ballerina.
Do you know what? Like, I was just
Culture Beat.
I cared so little.
Ace of Base.
I just didn't even bother researching.
Engelbert Humperdinck.
Probably,
that's my bet.
Probably. How would that go? He's auto-tuney, isn't he?
He uses a lot of auto-tune, as does Kanye. And your big prediction for the year in January was that auto-tune is dead, and you're totally wrong. And I go as far to say he doesn't rap, he auto-tunes. That's like all he does.
Yeah.
And I love it.
What? No, it's not good. How can you defend that?
Well, because it's huge. You've just said the big story of the week is to be Drake's playlist / album. And you predicted not 3 months ago. Well, auto-tune's dead.
He's annoyed me twice over. Because to me, like, a playlist is a playlist. It's like the equivalent of a mixtape, right? So you can choose loads of different
songs. No, I'm with you on that. Yeah.
And an album is an artist's own voice, their sort of their story that they tell in those songs, and I don't
their contractual obligation.
Their contractual
to put
obligation
some songs together
to churn
with some cover
out
up.
Some shite.
Yeah,
auto tune.
See, I always quite like singles bands, though. Is the truth? Like, I mean, I get what you're saying because I do love an album. I do love the classic albums, the ones that have sort of through lines and all the rest of it. But also, you know, I really like Madness. No one listens to a fucking Madness album. It'd be awful.
That's
just
true.
Listen to the greatest hits, don't
that's
you?
True.
I'm quite happy with bands like that.
But great if it pops up on a playlist.
Yes.
But it's interesting. Like, it's a shift in the music industry. And the Ed Sheeran thing that you pointed out is, you know, again, like, the whole sort of chart system is just being completely obliterated. 16 songs in the top 40. Don't just stare.
Well, so what it's to do with is the fact that however many streams, is it 100 counts as one buy? That
used
needs to.
To
change, doesn't
it? It's 150.
Right.
Which was their change, which is pathetic.
It's pathetic.
It's 1,000.
Exactly. Well, yeah. Well, 500.
No,
I don't know. Well, this is the problem, isn't it? You could just, well, yeah. Is that our game this week? You've just got to guess how many streams it should be to count as a buy.
No game.
Whoa.
Yeah, no game.
Talk about saving the bombshell for the end of the item.
I came up with a game.
Oh, and it was so bad that producer Matt said we can't even do
I
it.
I got told we can't
what was,
play.
What was it going to be?
I was just
going
to name some Ed Sheeran songs and some fake ones and then you had to guess it.
What were you going to call it?
I can't remember.
Brilliant.
It's good, isn't it? Classic.
No, I mean, it's why it's a group effort, isn't it, this show?
Yeah, yeah. It really is a team effort.
And if you want to be part of that team, if you want to suggest a trend that Ollie can talk about
please
in a future
help.
Edition
please
of the
help.
Show.
Please help. Please. Just anything.
Then what do people need to do?
Twitter.
Yes.
At the Modern Man.
Yeah.
MANN.
That's right, yeah. That's how you spell my name.
Put a lot of emphasis on the A.
Yeah.
Alternatively, just do something else with your life. Go and do some washing up.
Go and listen to a Drake playlist.
No. Album.
This is the ad. This is usually the bit where we tell you which company has sponsored the show for this week, and we often give you some sort of special deal or website code or something. Not this week. This ad slot hasn't been bought by a company. It's been bought by a person, an individual, a listener like you. His name is Al Philp, and he got in touch a few weeks ago to say that his Beer Money subscription wasn't enough for him. He wanted to sponsor a whole episode of the show because he is, in his words, quite the fan and wants to keep it going. I don't have anything particular to market, he said, but I dig your show and I would be happy to support it. And to our astonishment, Al did support it via PayPal, sending us a significant enough donation for us to turn away commercial advertisers for this slot this week and give it to him. All he wants in return is a shout out to his medical team. He says, I'm a trauma surgeon in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Despite that, I ride a motorcycle and am pretty proficient with firearms. You'd think I'd know better. I have a great team that works with me, some of whom are also fans of the show and will enjoy hearing themselves being appreciated. Well, Al Philp's medical team, you are deeply appreciated, obviously. Although not half as much as we here at The Modern Man appreciate listeners like you, Al. And I can see from your emails you've had a tricky time personally over the past year, and you've spent many hours enjoying whatever conversation and distraction we've been able to provide. It is so lovely and humbling to have someone reach out across the Atlantic and dip into their pocket as well, in recognition of what they've got from us. Al finished his correspondence with me by saying, Ollie, if you're ever on the East Coast or Midwest USA, let me know, and I can buy you a drink for real. Al, that really isn't necessary. The beer would be on me, so long as the gun's not there. If you would like to sponsor a future edition of the show, like Al did, whether you are a business or an individual, just reach out via the feedback form on our website, modernmanwith2ns.co.uk. Thanks. Now, are you in a long-term relationship? If so, how much do you trust the person that you're with? After all, everyone has the odd skeleton in their closet. Most people conceal some detail about themselves when they first start dating. But after a few weeks, a few months, a year, you'd hope most couples would be being mostly honest with each other when they choose to be together. My guest today, who we're calling Elizabeth, had a rather different experience. This is her story.
It feels like another lifetime that I met him. It must have been about back in 2012, because the Olympics were on. I remember it for that year. 6 months previously, I'd come out of quite a difficult relationship. It wasn't the happiest time of my life, and it had been quite drawn out. He wasn't the kind of man that I'd always gone for before. I'd always seemed to kind of stick to a certain type, and he seemed different. He just seemed like a nice, normal guy, which is ironic now looking back. He had come to the place where I worked, and he was contracted in to do some work. And then I don't know what it was that sparked my interest. I think I was just joking with a friend, and I said, oh, he's good looking. And he seemed mysterious because he'd come in from the outside. Nobody really knew anything about him. First of all, it was a little bit of a jokey thing, and it was like, oh, you know, you fancy him a little bit, like at school. It sounds juvenile now.
Flirtation.
Yeah. Although he was quite separate. He was in a separate room, but we would see each other in the corridor. And then I think we just started talking. My friends at work made a little bit of a joke out of it. And then I suppose I went out of my way a little bit more to bump into him. So I wouldn't say that I engineered situations, but I certainly maybe in the right corridor at the right time. So there was sort of great excitement. Oh, she likes somebody. So maybe we could make this happen, and maybe they would, you know, she could get a happy ending from all of it. But I'm a great believer in that you'd sort of get signals from somebody. And if you get the right signal, then, you know, you might think, oh, you know, there might be in with a chance there.
Yeah. And so actually you'd kind of done your due diligence here. This wasn't just, you know, you'd been through some tough times with previous relationships. Mm. And with this one, you dive straight in.
Mm.
This was actually... you'd sort of made it clear that you didn't want to go into a relationship that would be problematic, and this guy seemed like a safe pair of hands, and people were verifying that for you.
Absolutely not. All I wanted was to have a straightforward relationship. I didn't feel like I'd ever had that. I always felt like there'd been some kind of complication along the road, and I just wanted to be with somebody where you can go out for weekends with them, you can have a nice time, you can watch a film in the evenings. I wasn't looking for, and I'm still not looking for, a Prince Charming. I just wanted a normal relationship where you spend time with each other.
And how old are you at this point, and how old is he?
I think I must have been 26 or 27. He was 10 years older than me. He was living probably about a 40-minute drive away.
So you went on a few dates, presumably, and then...
So we organised the first date, and it was just to a restaurant sometime after work. And on the morning of that date, so we'd been kind of, you know, having a bit of chat on text messages, all very innocent, and then that morning... he sent me a message and he said, oh, don't take this the wrong way, but I think I'll just get a hotel tonight. Then I can have a drink and kind of relax.
Did that strike you as odd?
I guess it was a plausible response. You know, he might want to have a drink at dinner. I was driving, so it hadn't even occurred to me that I'd be drinking. But he was going to get a hotel in the town and he was just going to walk there afterwards. And I thought, well, yeah, maybe if he's got an early morning, if he's got an early start here as well, that probably makes sense for him to do that.
Bit of pressure on the first date, though, isn't it? By the way, I've got a hotel down the road.
Oh, yeah, there was going to be none of that. I think I made that very clear from the start. In fact, I think I can't remember now, but I probably said something along the lines of, yeah, I'll be driving myself and I'll be driving myself home afterwards.
Yes.
As well.
Okay, fine. So you went on some dates and you did become an item. At this point, you are naturally learning more about each other.
Yeah.
So what did he tell you about him?
I knew that he didn't have family in the country. I knew that there was an ex-wife. And when I asked him at what stage, because I suppose part of me still didn't really feel very comfortable with knowing that I was seeing somebody who wasn't completely divorced. I mean, I had quite a traditional upbringing and I've got quite strong views about marriage and being with somebody. But when I asked him about that, he told me that, yes, he had been married, but they got married on a beach in a foreign country. The reason that he wasn't divorced at this stage was because they weren't even sure whether the marriage was even legal. So how could he have a divorce if it was never legal in the first instance? He told me that he lived with a friend of his, that he was renting from a friend after his marriage had broken down. Within about a month, he was I can't say living with me because it wasn't in an official capacity, but I was seeing him like every evening. So he wasn't, and because he was working here as well, I suppose that worked out quite well for him, because instead of having to perhaps get a hotel room if he was doing an early shift the next day, he would just stay at mine. So for the first maybe 2 or 3 months, we were pretty much living in the same house with each other.
Obviously, people at work knew both of you, so it wasn't really a sort of private dalliance, this. Everyone knew you as a couple, I guess.
Yeah, it played out quite publicly. And he was welcomed in to the friendship group as well. People would talk, because of me, people would then talk to him. There was one of the girls at work, one of her taps broke, so he went round to fix it for her. So everybody seemed to really like him. And I think this was part of, they just desperately wanted me to be happy. Because the other thing I should say is that people were fully aware of perhaps the tough time that I'd had in previous relationships, and everybody was hoping for this happy time for me. He was very generous. He bought me a lot of gifts, and they were really quite extravagant gifts that he was giving me. So we got together in the January, so pretty soon afterwards we had Valentine's Day together, and he presented me with 2 Tiffany boxes with earrings in. And I just remember thinking, oh my goodness, this is, I felt like, it sounds really cheesy, but I felt like a princess. I'm not materialistic. Maybe I was a little bit more then. I've grown up now. But back then, when somebody hands you gifts, and it was constant. There was always, I mean, the joke was that I had this pile of Tiffany boxes piling up in my bedroom. And there were other gifts as well, you know, like little bits like clothes or, and it seemed like thoughtful things. You know, he went out and he saw a CD, so he would buy it for me. It seemed thoughtful.
Would you have said then that you were in love with him?
I think that I was a little bit swept away with everything. I think at the time, yes, I would say that I was in love with him. I was telling him that I was in love with him, and vice versa. And from very early on, we felt like this was something forever. You know, I could see myself marrying him, and he made it quite clear that was the same. We were infatuated, I think.
When you say he made it quite clear that was the same, so did you actually, I mean, in that abstract way people do when they're in a relationship but they're not quite ready to actually propose to each other, did you discuss, oh, I'd like one day to get married, have kids, da da da?
Oh, he measured my ring finger for an engagement ring. He measured that. He asked friends of mine how he should propose. Well,
how long have you been going out by that stage?
Just a few months.
That's heady.
Yeah, it is. But my dad proposed to my mum after 2 weeks. It took them another 2 years to get married. But, you know, in my world, I think when you know, you know. My mum's always said to me, you know, if you find that person that you want to be with, why waste any time? If you want to be with them, be with them.
Did you introduce him to your parents?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. And I can still remember my mum's reaction. Every parent wants to see their child happy. And they'd seen me have some unhappy times. So I took him to meet my parents, and he'd bought my mum a bouquet of flowers, just something simple, and he'd bought my dad his favourite chocolate, which seemed really thoughtful, kind of guided by me, because I knew that would go down well. And I remember him sitting there chatting to my dad, and my mum motioned for me to go into the kitchen. And she said to me, oh, he's lovely, just like that. And I thought, my mum's never wrong. My mum's always been right. This is what I've learned over the years. My mum is always right, and I should always listen to her. But she thought he was absolutely lovely. By this point, like I say, we were pretty much living together. He was always going to be at my place of work for a finite time, because it was a contracted job. Once the job had ended, he was a freelancer. He would work all around the country. So I knew that at some point, this kind of honeymoon period, if you like, of us being together the whole time would end when he had to go and work elsewhere. So that's what he started to do. So he was freelancing. He was going to different places. And so I was seeing a little bit less of him. He was still in touch the whole time.
But still using your home as a base when he was in
the
area.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I went on holiday. I went to the States. It was about the March time. So we'd met in the January, and that was March time, and I left him in my house. He was house sitting for me, and I got back and things had changed, and he like removed doors, and he tried to be helpful, and, you know, tried to make the place, you know, added ornaments and stuff like that. But I didn't mind that. I thought, well, he's making himself at home. But yeah, I trusted him enough to leave him in my house for 2 weeks.
Did he ever speak to anyone in the evening on the phone? Did you ever get the sense that he had another life outside? You know, was he emailing people or...
He was on the emails a lot, and he would tell me that it was for work, or he'd just have to get this invoice sent out. And I didn't think much of it because I'm not really a suspicious person. And I don't want to be one of those people who's saying to somebody, well, who are you talking to? What are you doing now? I just don't want to be that person. So if he says that he's writing an invoice, he's writing an invoice. My birthday was June time, and we'd planned a bit of a family dinner, nothing fancy. And I was really looking forward to it because I hadn't seen as much of him as I probably would have liked to. You know, we went from spending so much time together to him kind of making, I hesitate to say make excuses. I didn't see them as excuses at the time, but he was working. He had things to do. His friend who he lived with had, in that time, had a terrible accident. He'd been working and he'd been crushed by a cherry picker. My boyfriend had to go and take care of him because they were living together, and you know, he had to look at adapting the house and he had to be there as a support. So there was something that he'd pulled out of, there was an event that he'd pulled out of because he had to go and be with his friend, which absolutely, you know, somebody tells you that their best friend has been in a terrible accident, then you expect them to go and see them. And then it was my birthday and this family meal was planned, and he seemed just sort of shifty, I suppose, and he seemed really on edge. And I said to him, you know, what's wrong? What's wrong? We're going to be going out in a few hours. He said, oh, it's just, you know, work have called and they really want me to go and do a few extra hours. Do you mind? And I said, well, I'm not going to tell you not to do it, but I'd rather you didn't because it's my birthday and we're about to go out and have a family meal. And he went, oh, right, okay. And I was upstairs doing my makeup. And the next thing I knew, I heard the door shutting and I thought, he's gone. So he's gone. He just left.
So that was the moment where you began to think, what's going on here, was it? You were sitting there at your birthday meal without him, people saying, where is he? And you couldn't really answer that.
Yeah, and I felt hurt as well and quite full because I'd eaten a whole tub of Haagen-Dazs in that time because I was quite sad about that. And I just, I suppose there was a little bit of me that felt like I'd failed again a little bit because here I was again with another boyfriend who was bailing out on me. Some of my memories are hazy, but they're a really clearly defined moments. And the next one came in September. It was one of my best friend's weddings. Weddings are an expensive thing for people and you never take a wedding invite for granted. She'd invited us both and we both accepted, and I remember saying to him, and he'd been really flaky, he'd been pulling out of things that we were meant to go to, and I said to him, look, it's really important, you can't give this up, you know, I know that work is important but so is your personal life, so are your friendships. And I said to him, you absolutely can't cancel for this. So I guess it was already on my mind that he might be cancelling for something. I was sitting there and I think I'd been talking to a friend on the phone, and then I looked at my phone and he'd sent me a message saying, I can't make your friend's wedding. I'm being sent away for work. So of course, first thing I did was call him. I was like, what do you mean you're being sent away? It's in 2 weeks' time. And he said, they're sending me to Angola for work. I can't get out of it. I'm the only person on my team who has the necessary documents to go. I have absolutely no option. So, you know, if you want to split up with me, you can split up with me, but I can't go. And then I had to go there and have this empty seat with a meal brought out next to me while he was off in Angola. And then kind of went AWOL for the next couple of weeks after he was due back.
So he told you, I'm coming back at this particular time, and then just didn't?
It was all very sketchy. He told me that he was being sent there. They didn't know how long it would last, probably about 2 weeks. I was like, okay.
Do you even know where Angola is on a map?
I had to look it up. At that point, it was a war-torn country. That's the only thing I remember about it. It just seemed that had to be real. Where would you get Angola from? You say, oh, no, I've been sent to work in London, or I'm being sent to work in, you know, Paris for a bit. At the end of those 2 weeks, he said that the company that he was working for hadn't booked him a flight back. So he was stuck at an airport for probably about, I think the email exchanges went on for about 4 days where he was waiting at this airport. And I do remember thinking at the time, and I remember somebody saying to me, what kind of company sends someone off and then they don't book a return flight? I was like, well, this company that he's working for, obviously. Then he said, I've managed to get a flight, but I'm going to go and see my mum first. And his mum was living in another country. So he said, I couldn't get a flight back to the UK, so I'm going to go and spend some time with her and then I'll come back. And I remember thinking at the time, oh, how nice that, you know, he can go and spend a bit of time with his mum. I knew that their relationship hadn't always been fantastic, so I thought it was really nice that he could go and spend a bit of time with her. But there was about a 2 or 3 week period where he was. I was only communicating with him via emails.
So what would happen when you'd call him? He just wouldn't pick up.
Do you know? I'm not sure I ever tried to call. Had I called, you would have had an international dialing tone. But he had said to me that this is where he was. Why would I question it? He told me that the only means of communication would be via email, so that's how I communicated with him.
What did he tell you about Angola?
That the sand gets everywhere. And he spoke to friends of mine as well. He came back and I remember saying to him, oh, I would have thought you'd be a bit... Because I think it was quite hot out there at the time, and I said, oh, I would have thought you'd be a bit more tanned maybe, because he was olive skin. Oh, no, I was inside for the whole time. And he spoke to friends of mine as well, and they asked him, just as you would do, about working out there, and he gave quite convincing stories.
When did you suspect that the truth might be different to what was being presented to you?
We were getting towards Christmas.
So you've been together for a year by this
point. Yeah, the best part of a year. And he had promised that Christmas would be spent together. He was on a job, I think it was Manchester, and then he had an accident. And he did have he was living with a disability, and the accident that he had was linked to that. So basically, it was kind of making his disability worse, if you like. Basically, he told me that he'd had this accident and he may never be able to walk again, and he was stuck in a hospital in Manchester.
Christ.
And my initial reaction was, my God, are you okay? What's going on? How can I help? Can I come and see you? No, you can't come and see me. Visiting hours are really, really strict here. I mean, I Googled the hospital. I was like, right, that's my route. I can get there. I could leave work on a Friday afternoon. I could, you know, get a hotel and spend some time with him and go visit. No, you can't come because visiting hours are really strict, and they seem to keep moving him as well from ward to ward. And I would say, right, shall I come this weekend? And he would say, no, they might move me to Birmingham this weekend. Well, I can come and see you there. No, I don't think that's a good idea, because I just don't know what I'm going to be doing. And at that point, I noticed that there was a pattern, that he would be messaging me in the day, and then it would get to about 6 or 7 o'clock and everything would go quiet. And I'd send a message and I wouldn't hear anything from him. And then at about 10 o'clock, I'd suddenly hear from him again. And I made a joke with him at that time. And I said to him, do you know, it's almost like you have a wife who comes home at 7 o'clock. That's the end of her working day. She comes home and then you can't speak to me for a certain time. And then I hear from you again. And he said, I can't believe you would say that. He said, that's the time that they come around to give me my medication. So they give me my medication at 6 or 7, and then it completely knocks me out, and then I'm awake again at 10. And I felt so bad. And then we got to Christmas time, and then the text came through, you're going to hate me, but I can't spend Christmas with you. And I was like, I almost expected it. And then that was the point where people started losing patience with him. Not so much me. I was still believing everything that I was told. My mum once said to me, if you're a naturally honest person, it will never occur to you that other people are lying to you. But that was the point where I think certain members of my family lost patience with this and started to grow a little bit suspicious.
Who?
My brother and sister-in-law. Mainly my sister-in-law.
What did she say?
She just said to me, are you sure? Are you sure about this guy? And I was like, well, how can you question him? He's had such a difficult life. He doesn't talk to his family. He lives with this disability. Yeah, he gets on with his life, but you know, it's always going to be a bit of a strain. And she just said, I'm just not happy about it. And the next thing I knew, we were about 2 or 3 days before Christmas. I remember it was a Friday evening, and I got a phone call from my sister-in-law, and she said to me, it's never good when you get a phone call that begins with, can you sit down? you just know nothing good is going to happen. And she said, we've spent the whole evening looking on Facebook. And I said, well, you're not going to find him. He's not on Facebook. She said, no. But we found a woman who we think is his wife. And I said, well, we know. We actually knew her name. That's the thing. He'd referred to her in the past. We knew her first name. And I said, well, that's no secret. So they had trawled through Facebook to find anybody with her name. But she had a first name that you could have variations of it. You could shorten it. And her profile picture wasn't of her, it was of an animal. So that, of course, that doesn't really narrow it down. But they eventually found her, and she said, we found pictures of their wedding. And I was like, again, well, that doesn't mean anything. We've always known that he's been married, that he was married. She said, where did he tell you that he got married? I said, on a beach. And she said, well, the pictures that are on Facebook, it's a city wedding. And it's quite obviously not on a beach. And that was the first time that I thought, well, hang on a second. Why would you say you got married on a beach? Mm. And then she said to me, it looks like they're still together. She's still got all of the wedding pictures up on Facebook. And she said, just go and have a look. Just go and have a look and see what you think. It was almost like somebody had, you know, like a snow globe. That's what happened to my world at that point. It was like somebody had picked it up and shaken it and put it back down. I felt like everything, it was like the world just tipped on its axis. Suddenly, the person that you have thought you were the closest in the world to is not the person that you think they were. And they had found just a comment that she'd posted. And it was obviously about the two of them, how they'd been somewhere together. And I remember looking at it thinking, well, why would you still have, if you're divorced, why would you have those wedding pictures on? And that evening I tried calling him. So it's a Friday before Christmas. He didn't pick up. And I left voicemail saying, there's something's not right. Could you just, I just need to ease my mind here. Because I was still thinking, well, there's probably a perfectly reasonable explanation for all of this. So yeah, it was the next day that I heard from him. And I said, it looks like you're still married. And he denied it at first, but as it came out, he had to admit it. Yeah, I've still got a wife. Yeah, I was living basically a double life all along. I still don't know the truth. I still don't know what was real and what was fake, because he wouldn't give me straight answers. And I was having to almost prize the information out of him. He was still telling me at that point that he was in hospital. And so we decided to play not a little joke. I mean, it was no joking matter at this point, but just to see how far he was willing to go with this. I said, right, well, we're on our way to Manchester, which is where he was in hospital. And I said, oh, we're 10 minutes away from the hospital. So I hadn't spoken to him for about 2 hours. And I said to him, we're about 10 minutes away from the hospital. My sister-in-law has driven me up just because I feel like we need a face-to-face chat. And he said, oh, I'm not there. And I said, where are you? He said, oh, they've moved me. And I said, well, where can I meet you then? You know, she's happy to drive anywhere. And he said, oh, could you meet me at such and such services? And that's when another, if you like, penny dropped, because the services that he'd mentioned, we knew that that was just a stone's throw away from where he lived with his wife. So it
and
looked...
not where you get taken to when you're hospitalised.
No, he said that a friend had come to collect him from hospital and they were now at this service station. This whole time, I am sitting in my bed, like surrounded by boxes of tissues because I've been crying my eyes out, in my dressing gown, trying to eat a piece of toast, but playing him at his own game, really, and trying to give him a shock. And then that's when he had to come clean. I said, you're not with a friend at all. You've been with your wife and you've picked a place to meet me. And I even said to him, because I had once seen his old address, what I thought was his old address, on an envelope that he'd had delivered. And I just, for some reason, that stuck in my head. And I said, well, I know the address, such and such drive, right? I'll come around. We'll be around the corner in a minute. And then he panicked because he knew that the game was up and that I would, you know, potentially be knocking on his door and finding his wife standing there.
So what did you establish? Were there any children?
No children. I mean, I'm saying this now with some certainty, but I never got the whole truth. But as far as I understand, there were no children. His wife was 10 years older than him, which made her 20 years older than I was.
Do you think the whole time that he was working with you and living with you, he was telling her that he was just working?
Yeah. She had a job as well. She was a busy lady. Yeah, I think so. I think that he was leading a double life in every way. My family found out bits and pieces about their life together, and certain dates coincided with certain anniversaries that he would have had to have been there for. Or, you know, his wife had called him, she might have been in a state about something. Of course he's got to run and be there for her. And that's, you know, when he left abruptly on my birthday, I have no doubt that that was what that was for. When his friend was crushed by the cherry picker. Well, there never was a friend. He never did rent a house off a friend. He was living with his wife the whole time. That's just such a it's not a ludicrous story, because, you know, freak accidents happen all the time, but to make that up is incredible. Angola was a lie. And Angola was, we later found out, that was his wedding anniversary, and he and his wife had gone to the States for it, to celebrate it. And I never really found this out, but I'm guessing that the delay that came on the way back was because he couldn't very well go on holiday with her for 2 weeks and then just disappear off again. He had commitments, he had to work.
You must have felt like an idiot.
I did. And I felt so disappointed. I just thought,
you've
how
done
is
absolutely
this...
nothing wrong.
No.
But you must have just felt like that.
Yeah, I just thought, how has this happened to me? There were a couple of things that made me really sad about it. One of them was that he knew that I'd come out of a difficult relationship, and he knew that from the start, and yet he still decided to go ahead with all of that. He had the opportunity to get out. When I said to him, do you have a wife and kids? He could have got out at that point. He could have got out at any point. I wasn't particularly clingy, and that may have been the problem, was that I let him live his own life. So he was free to do as he pleased. The other thing that really upset me was that I was basically made the other woman against my will, and that is never ever a position that I would ever put myself in.
If he'd have said yes, I've got a wife and kids, you'd have said, well, I'm not having an affair with you.
Exactly. You know, I wasn't even given the choice. And I had a very odd time after I found out about him, and I think it was just due to shock and my head being so badly messed up at that point that I nearly took him back. And it wasn't an instant, right, we're finished, I found out that you're lying to me. I had a good 3 weeks where I mulled it over. And my poor family and friends, they must have just been thinking, what on earth is she doing? But I just, you know, I couldn't get out of my head that we'd had a future together, and then suddenly all of this was snatched away from me.
I mean, there'd probably be a case, I don't know under what law, but you'd probably have a legal case against him. He effectively defrauded you. You know, he said a lot of things that weren't true, shared your house, earned your trust.
On an emotional level, yes.
I mean, we're not living 500 years ago, but bigamy is still a pretty nasty thing to do.
I mean, it never got to that stage, but even the fact that he was talking to people about proposing to me, and I mean, and he was so integrated in my friendship group as well. I think a lot of people were hurt by it. A lot of people just couldn't understand.
Did you tell everyone straight away? I imagine if you were embarrassed, it's something you didn't want to go around saying to everyone. Hey, you never guess what? This guy I've been with for a year.
I sometimes think that it's best to, sadly, past experience has taught me that sometimes it's best just to tell people, just to send a text message, say, just so you know, we're not together anymore, just so they don't ask. And then they're in that awful situation where you burst into tears on them, because that's the last thing you want. When you're really trying to keep it together, it's the last thing that you want to do, is to have somebody say, oh, so, you know, how's he doing? Is he out of hospital yet? So I had to send messages to certain people who I knew would ask. And then luckily I had the Christmas break to, well, I say luckily, it completely wrecked my Christmas, but to try and get my head around it a bit. And I still saw him a couple of times after that. He spent New Year's Eve with me. I mean, I don't know what I was thinking. Like,
well,
now,
you must have had a hard conversation with him. You are an assertive young woman. You must have sat down and said,
I don't think I was as much back then. I think I've really learnt life lessons in those years since then. But yeah, we did have conversations, but the story just constantly changed. I was never quite sure what was real and what was fake after that. And that wasn't just with him. I went through a really, what I now think of as quite a sad time, where I just felt like I couldn't trust anybody, because if he would lie to me, I had a hard time believing anything that anybody said to me. And then there was a real defining point where I made up my mind. So I was still, I can't believe I was, but I was still umming and ahhing. Should I be with this man? He would tell me something different about his wife every day. They were mid-divorce. They were separated. They weren't living together. But the defining point, one of my friends threw a party. And he had, the boyfriend or ex-boyfriend as he was now, or something in between, had gone to stay with his mum for real, I think this time. I think he was telling the truth that time. So he was out of the country. And I went to this party, and it was almost like, it sounds really cheesy, but I just felt like myself again. Mm. I was running around, I was being silly. It was full of people who genuinely liked me for me and cared for me. And I thought, what am I doing? What am I doing wasting my time? Like, there might be the chance of happiness somewhere in the future, but if I stay with this man, or if I get back together with this man, how do I know he's not going to do that to me in a year, 5 years, 10 years time?
I mean, maybe this is easier said than done, but looked at now with your slightly more mature grown-up hat on, what's there to stop him doing it to another woman? I mean, did you think, you know, I need to give him a bollocking, because otherwise someone else is going to go through this? He's going to do it again.
And my spies, that's my family, they kept an eye on him afterwards. Like, just through Facebook, not in a menacing way at all, but just through Facebook, they kept an eye on him. And they discovered that he was seeing somebody else. I never contacted his wife. And a few people said to me, why didn't you speak to her? And I don't... Partly because I guess I just wanted to distance myself from the whole situation. I certainly didn't want to be named in a divorce. because I guess that could have happened because, you know, he was committing adultery. I didn't know that he was, but he was. Partly because I didn't want to put her through, I didn't want to put any woman through the pain that I had felt, which maybe is a bit selfish. Maybe she should have known. I know that they're not together now, but I heard from him even 6 months or a year after. I was getting messages from him saying, you know, I'm so sorry for what I did. Can we just meet up for a coffee so I can explain? Well, no, life moves on. One of the best moments that came from the whole thing was when he wrote me a very, very long letter. It was about 4 pages long. I've probably still got it somewhere, on why we should be together and what he would offer me in the future. And at the end of it, he said, with all this in mind, I will be taking you out for Valentine's dinner. I will pick you up from your house at such and such a time. And I read that and I thought, that's never going to happen. So my original plan was just to stay in the house with all the lights off. And my brother said to me, no, you come out to me. I'll make you dinner. We'll have a nice... His wife was away. He was like, you know, we'll have a nice evening together, brother and sister, because that's not pathetic on Valentine's Day at all. So I was out of the house. Everything had completely finished by the end of January. And then this was Valentine's Day. And I wish I had CCTV, but I guess he turned up at my house. And one of my friends got a message saying, I knew people hated me. I didn't realise they hated me that much, that she wouldn't even be there when I turned up. And she was like, what did you expect? Of course she's not going to go out for Valentine's dinner with you. I couldn't believe, like, the cheek of it, that he still thought that we were going to be a couple once I'd come to my senses and once I was out of that hazy time.
You still work in the same place.
Mm.
What would you do if he showed up and had a contract here? What would you say to him?
Nothing. I don't think I'd even acknowledge him because the person that I was with wasn't who he actually was. That wasn't a real person. He invented that person with all the lies. As far as I'm concerned, he would be a complete stranger. And, you know, time is a wonderful thing. And I look back on all of this now and in a way it's become an anecdote. You know, people joke about it with me. I mean, they wouldn't have dreamt of joking about it with me in the aftermath. But people will joke now about elements of it. Angola has become a running joke, of course. But I don't mind that now. To me, it's something that happened and I can look on it with almost curiosity at times. And every now and again, it will pop into my head and I'll think, oh, was that a lie? Oh, what happened there? But not in a way that it hurts me anymore.
You're single at the moment.
Yes.
Has it affected your relationship since?
I probably should be more suspicious. If I'm with somebody, I'm still with someone with my whole heart. It has made me less tolerant. So I have had a relationship since him. But it was with somebody who, again, was in a different way. He was very busy and he didn't have a lot of time for me. And I learned what I want from a relationship. And I learned that I don't want boxes and boxes of jewellery. I don't want constant gifts. I want somebody's time. And if they can't give me that, then that's not the kind of person that I can be with. And I find that now I have this thing where the shutters come down. So with my last boyfriend, there was a moment where he was like, oh, I'm just not sure that my heart's really in this. And then for me, it was like, bam, that's it. You're out then. I won't speak to you again. I think you can tell when something is worth fighting for. And I just didn't feel in that moment that I could fight for something. I think I really fought for it with the guy that I was with in 2012. I desperately wanted it to work. And now I realise that there's nothing wrong with something not working. And sometimes it's just better to be on your own than unhappy with somebody and trying desperately to make something work.
Well, you deserve someone who's going to give you their time.
Thank you.
I'm sure you will find that person.
But, you know, if I don't, I've got a lot of stories to tell.
It's time to chat all things orgasmic and dirty with Alex Fox in the Foxhole. Hello, Alex.
Hello, Ollie. How are you?
Dressed for spring, like you.
Oh, thanks. Do you like my new jumper that
I
says,
love it.
Too sassy for you?
And you are absolutely right. You are sassier than myself and producer Matt, who are the only people in your eye line presently.
Sassier and spaffier.
What have you been up to this week?
I went to see a brilliant play at Southwark Playhouse called Diary of a Teenage Girl. I think it's an adaptation of a book, which was also adapted into a TV show.
Yes, I think I heard about it on telly, yeah.
It tells the tale of a 15-year-old called Minnie, who has a sexual relationship with her mum's boyfriend, who's in his 30s.
Wow. And she's 15.
She's 15, yeah. And the play is presented through the form of her talking into a microphone. She records an audio diary, so you hear all her thoughts on what it's like to have sex for the first time. And rather than it being framed as though she sees herself being exploited, Minnie sees it as incredibly exciting that she's having this intense fling. And also, the play doesn't shy away from recognising that even though she is underage and she is being exploited, she has a high sex drive. She's a teenager full of hormones. But obviously, her mum's boyfriend ought to know better than to take advantage of that situation. But it raises some really interesting questions and difficult debates, but it's done really well.
It's exactly the same setup then, isn't it, as Russell T. Davis uses in Queer as Folk, isn't it? You've got a 15-year-old lad there trying to lose his virginity and getting really excited when it happens, but then you're looking at it
from the outside going, oh, this feels predatory.
Half your age, yeah.
Although I've spoken to a lot of gay men whose first experiences have been with older guys, and I've had very tricky conversations where, from my point of view, it has sounded very much like these older men are preying on them. But from their point of view, they still view those young, early experiences as something that they treasure. And you don't want to rebrand someone's memory as a negative thing if they see it as a positive. But I find those chats really difficult to have.
I suppose people who are at that age, 15 and actually 16 and 17 as well, have different levels of maturity, which is why the age of consent is where it is, isn't it? You know, no two 15-year-olds are alike, I guess.
No, although, as you picked up on there, the law says that they are.
Yes.
You know, you can only consent from the age of 16.
On to our listener question of the week.
Yes.
Brought to you, as ever, by our friends at mycondom.com. Alex, tell us about them.
Well as selling condoms, they sell multiple different types of cock rings, including ones with vibrators to add stimulation and ones that constrict the base of the penis slightly to help you sustain a fuller erection for longer.
I wonder if there's one that constricts and vibrates.
You need to have a slightly more jelly-type texture, a more stretchy texture to most cock rings to accommodate a vibrating bullet within them. So the ones that vibrate tend to be, in general, more as a toy, whereas the ones that are harder generally tend to be more to help with erectile dysfunction or to help sex last longer. That's not always the case. You can spend more and have vibrating ones that also will keep you firm.
Let's get on to our question of the week then. It has been submitted by an anonymous lady who says, "Hi Alex, I have a WeVibe Bluetooth vibrator. And given all the news about them, I'm wondering if people from the UK qualify for compensation after they collected and stored intimate information about their users. I've not heard about this story. I really don't want to use my WeVibe now, and it was really expensive. And when in a long-distance relationship, every penny counts."
Okie dokie. First up, Mr. Man, do you know what a WeVibe is?
I mean, I'm going to guess it's a web-connected vibrator.
Yes, it is. It's a very particular type.
Okay.
It's made by a company who I believe are from Canada called Standard Innovation. They make all sorts of different WeVibes, but the ones that are most famous are kind of shaped like they're U-shaped or horseshoe-shaped, and they're designed to be worn by a woman. So one bit goes inside of her and the other bit is on the outside and rests on her clitoris. Mm-hmm. It means that it can vibrate inside and out of her at the same time. Mm-hmm. And also it can be worn during intercourse.
Oh, wow.
So when a man enters her, he feels the vibrations as well.
That's less for the man to do as well. That doesn't, you know, because if you have to use a vibrator, not have to, if you're choosing to use a vibrator during straight penetrative sex, then the man's usually holding that thing at the same time.
Well, a woman can hold it.
Or the woman can hold it. Someone's got to hold it. There's a hand involved.
Well, you can get hands-free ones as well, like the WeVibe is designed to be.
Yes.
But there are other models are available.
My point is I've not heard of a hands-free vibrator.
It's a hands-free vibrator, but later models also came with an app that you download onto your smartphone, and you can program them to vibrate in certain patterns or different intensities, or you can make them buzz faster or more slowly. You can also use that app remotely. So say if you are a woman wearing the WeVibe and your lover is in another country, for example, on business.
As appears to be the case here.
Yeah. Then you can get down to business using the WeVibe and the app.
So the idea is what you're FaceTiming or Skyping or whatever.
Yeah, you can Skype or you can be texting or however you want to play it. It's a really great innovative product.
I'm just curious, is there something for the gentleman to wear at the same time then? Whilst he's
not currently with WeVibe, although you can get other things. There's a firm called Kiru which make interactive vibrators where there's kind of a masturbatory cup that the guy puts mm-hmm. his schlong in, and then a vibrating device for the woman that she puts inside herself. And every motion that one person makes is imitated by the other person's toy, and thus it's you can virtually feel each other's movements.
So if he's wearing the tube and she's wearing the Wii Vibe, you're going to have so many screens going on with all these different companies. Be like Rick Wakeman.
Dick,
you were going to say Dick Wakeman,
yeah,
weren't you?
I had to go there. So that's what a Wii Vibe is.
Yeah.
Really well-respected company up until recently. What happened is at a conference in August last year called DEF CON, which is a hacking conference.
Sorry, I'm sure this isn't supposed to be funny. The idea of hacking a vibrator is funny, in a way that hacking baby monitors just isn't.
What they discovered was that data was being collected by the Wii Vibe app without express user permission.
But what data?
Some of it was really designed to check whether the hardware, whether the actual vibrator was working as it should do. Mm-hmm. So they were monitoring the core temperature of it to make sure it wasn't overheating, things like that. But they were also monitoring user habits. So they were collecting information on people's average speed of use, or how long their sex sessions lasted, or if there were particular vibration patterns that were more popular than others. And Standard Innovation claimed that they were only using this data to try and improve products for the future. Mm. It was all stored in aggregate on their servers, so it wasn't connected to any particular people. You couldn't identify who was doing what. But it was stored alongside some email addresses, so potentially there was could have been the potential for that data to be used in a way that would compromise people. What the people at DEF CON also discovered was that it's possible for an individual to hack somebody else's Wii Vibe and control it remotely themselves. So in theory, you could think that you were having a sexual experience with your partner who was in another place, when in fact you were having a sexual experience with somebody else who had hacked the app.
But they can't see your reaction, can they?
No, but not everybody uses it with Skype. Not everyone uses it with FaceTime. Mm. So sometimes you might think your partner is using their phone to turn you on, when in fact it's a stranger. Mm. And that was likened to a form of tech sexual assault. But hold on,
you're only going to be wearing it at the point you think you're having sex with someone. I mean, I do understand the illusion, don't get me wrong. I understand the comparison. It's a bit like someone walking in the room pretending to be your partner and it's not them. But actually, I mean, if you are speaking to your partner at the same time and you know that they are controlling it, and it's not literally their control that you're feeling. I mean, it is the same thing.
Lots of people have come up with lots of different points of view on the severity of this mistake. And I'm calling it a mistake because I do think that the makers of Wii Vibe didn't intend to collect this data for nefarious purposes.
I mean, in terms of your sexual behaviour, if you're having sex in your sitting room and you've got a Samsung smart TV, that's been recording the sounds of you having sex and uploading it to a server somewhere, hasn't it? So actually,
also,
you know, the
detail
of whether or not you're wearing your vibrator seems minor.
And also, we give permission to God knows how many Facebook apps every week or whatnot to collect data from us. It's just people are particularly sensitive about sexual data.
Yeah. Okay, but our lady who's written in doesn't want to use her Wii Vibe anymore, and she wants to know if she in the UK can qualify for compensation.
Right. Since the court case, the makers of Wii Vibe have changed the way the app and the Wii Vibe works. It no longer collects that data. You have to actively opt in if you're happy for it to do that. So you can freely still use your device without worrying that your data is going to some computer and God knows where.
So there's an update that's gone through to it?
Yes, yeah. Okay. And everything sold from now on will have clearer security terms to it.
And it's not issuing false diesel emissions either. Just to be clear.
No, but I'm not sure about anyone or their partner. Their emissions are their business. In terms of compensation, I don't know whether anyone's claimed in the UK so far, but abroad, people have been given around the equivalent of about £6,000 per person if they bought a Wii Vibe before, I think it's the 26th of September 2016, and they used it with the app. If you didn't use it with the app, you can get the equivalent of a refund on your purchase. So if the person who's written in really doesn't want to use their device again and contact Standard Innovation, I should imagine that they will at least get their cash back for their investment. There are law firms who are taking cases from people with a view of suing in this country. That hasn't happened in the UK yet, so I can't guarantee that they'd get loads of compensation.
If you have a question of things you insert into you or want to insert into you or worry that it's not happening enough, then you can get in touch for next week's show. How can people do
you
that?
You can insert your question into the feedback form at our website, which is modernman.co.uk.
You certainly can. And remember in the meantime that if you want to buy vibrators that are both web connected and not, and condoms and other things, use our discount code at mycondom.com to get 15% off, and it is...
Foxhole!
And with that, this week's Modern Man is very nearly at an end, but I do just have time to anoint a new manbassador. It's Nazanin, a 28-year-old from Iran, who's written us a review on iTunes. She says, yours is one of the most informative and exciting podcasts, second only to No Such Thing as a Fish. It answers all your questions right to the point, no matter what that point is anatomically. Thanks for that. And I hereby pronounce you Manbassador for Iran. Amazing. If you would like to be a Manbassador, just leave us a review at itunes.com/MANN or buy us a beer at modernmanwith2ns.co.uk and click Beer Money. Our theme is by Django Django from their self-titled debut album. Just think, if every listener streamed that today, we could get it back in the charts. Think about that. And our record of the week has already entered your ears. It is called Ceasefire. It's by former Sonic Youth frontman Thurston Moore, and it's available for free right now from thurstonmoore.kungfustore.com. I've been Ollie Mann, the producer Matt Hill, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
Kids are wired. One last cigarette. Watch the smiles seem sweat.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.